The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Texas show.
I hate to spread rumors, but someone told me that Eric stood in front of a microwave too many times, and now he's got feathers sprouting from his neck.
Some kind of mutation, I guess.
Eric's very embarrassed about it. The doc told him there's nothing medical science can offer him.
Except maybe telling him to wear turtlenecks.
Anyway, thought you should know.
And now here's your chicken man of the airwaves, Eric Metaxas.
Albin, I just want you to know, you can see these are not feathers.
No, they
okay?
don't.
They might look like feathers.
Furry thing.
They might feel like feathers.
Kinda.
But for the love of Christmas, these are not feathers.
Well, don't ask me to feel them. Whatever they are, I prefer not to.
You know, Todd Wilkerson, he says things he shouldn't say. He does things he shouldn't do. Mm. And let me just cut to the chase. He's a bad person. But I believe in giving people a second chance.
What Jackie Gleason would say, he's got a big mouth.
That's right. Yeah. And but, you know, there's something about Todd that it's kind of like moth to a flame. I'm drawn to him despite the fact that he's self-destructive to himself and everyone around him. Todd Wilkerson, my dear, dear former friend, Todd Wilkerson. Anyway, we've got a lot to cover here. First of all, in a couple of minutes, we're talking for the rest of the hour to Jonathan Merritt. Now, Jonathan Merritt is politically liberal, but he and his friend and my friend, Kirsten Powers, the two of them do a podcast. I was on their podcast, and they're committed to civility in the sense that even though they take a politically liberal view, they try to be civil about it. Why? Because they are first Christians and secondly politically liberal. I'd like to think that I, too, am first a Christian.
It really gets me angry, though, when people want to be civil.
I know. Don't you hate that? What a bunch of jerks. Okay, so but we're talking to Jonathan Merritt in a second. He's got a brand new book out, and I always enjoy him, I have to say. And then also there were some elections last night.
I in Vermont, this was unusual, right? A transsexual person won the election. Now, I get the idea that people up there in Vermont, they're looking for change, right? And and who would be a better, you know, expert in change than a...
Wow, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Like somebody who has lived that kind of dramatic change.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm throwing it out.
That's definitely not something I thought about, and I certainly would not say that. But let me say this.
Okay.
We're still doing a raise for Food for the Poor. If you've not yet given to Food for the Poor, folks... we're committed to sticking with it until we can raise the right amount. This is a great cause. So this is an opportunity for anybody who's listening to help kids that literally are not getting nutrition. They are not getting food. They're not getting nutrition. Some of them are genuinely starving. It's one of these things that's very hard for us to get our heads around, that kids not far from us, in our own hemisphere, very close to us, are at this level of poverty. We know that the Haitian government is pathetic. We also know that the Clintons and their foundation did very little to help. That to me is incredible because they had hundreds of millions of dollars. So we just try not to think about that. But Food for the Poor is on the ground. They have been helping there for a long time. So I want to ask you folks, go to MetaxasTalk.com and give to Food for the Poor. The kids that are there, I mean, just imagine not having food to fill your belly. We're not talking about the kind of food. We're talking about food to fill your belly so that you have energy, so that you can think. These kids are starving, and you try to put yourself in the position of a parent or a grandparent to not have enough food to give your kids. This is heartbreaking stuff. My parents went through this during the war and after the war. They know what it is to be hungry. So if you are listening right now, we'd love you to go to MetaxasTalk.com. And I'll give you the phone number because some people would prefer to call. It's 844-330-HOPE, 844-330-HOPE, or you can dial 844-330-4673, 844-330-4673. I think we have a quote that a clip that I want to play.
Prince, we have one main center where we provide over 15,000 meals per day. So people could go with their buckets and get rice and beans and some proteins, other protein source, whether it's beef or chicken or some vegetables in a stew and given to them, and they'll take it home to feed maybe 5, 7, maybe 9 people in their household. And this happens from Monday to Friday.
Well, there you have it. I mean, it's that simple. People are going with buckets to get food to feed their families. This is what Food for the Poor does. I've gotten to know them. But yesterday we had our very dear friend Kevin McCullough talking about his experience of having been there with Food for the Poor 3 times in Haiti. And you just can't believe it. So the way I see it, though, as horrifying as it is, there's an opportunity for us in the West. The Lord has blessed us to be a blessing. And we have disposable income. Some of us have very, very little. Some of us have more. Some of us have a lot. I just want to say this is one of the things that we as a show, we've committed ourselves to helping Food for the Poor. And we've committed to raising a minimum amount. So we'll ask you until we do raise that amount. But there are people out there I know who can afford to give a lot, and we want to say thank you to those people in particular by inviting you to have dinner with us. If you give $10,000, you get all of the signed books and all this other kind of stuff and free subscription to food – I'm sorry, just to Metaxas Super. And you also get to have dinner with me, and for $10,001, dinner with me – and Albin.
Woohoo!
And
I'm hungry, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it works.
But it's such fun. I love meeting people
it's great.
Who are rich. And the people who give $10,000, typically they're rich. No, in all seriousness, people who we know so many people who have money, but people who give to the things I care about, when we get together and have dinner, you feel like you're old friends. This has happened many times to us. You meet people and you kind of feel like you've known them. Because they care about what you care about. They're willing to give. And also, they're familiar with the show and whatever. So we love to do this. I have so few evenings available. I travel so much, and I have so many other commitments, and I've got a writing deadline at this point. And so we really do want to encourage anybody, just as a lark, maybe you want to it's on your bucket list to come to New York. You've never come before or something like that. Come and have dinner with us, and we'll have fun. If you give $500, of course, you can come to the studio and hang out, and you can bring 100 children, provided they're all your children. We're going to need to see documentation, but you can do whatever you want. And we're going to move to our new studios in October. So I want to say that all this stuff, it can be a lot of fun, but the cause could not be more serious
That's
and more
true.
Important.
Yes.
So you go to MetaxasTalk.com or you go to the phone number, which we've given you, 844-330-HOPE, 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 844-330-HOPE. That's 844-330-HOPE. 844-330-HOPE. Okay. I don't want to forget to mention that we've got a website, MetaxasForHillsdale.com. If you go to MetaxasForHillsdale.com, you can get a free subscription to Imprimis. I was just reading it on the air yesterday.
Yes.
Every month.
Great
this
articles.
Is free,
yeah.
And they're not bugging you for money or
nope.
anything. They send you an essay. Now, look, Hillsdale, they are educating generations of kids to understand American-style freedom, to understand what the founders have given us. It's incredible, but they do way more than defend freedom to their great students. Yeah, they take it beyond the campus, and they want to help everybody in America and beyond America to understand it. So one of the ways they do this is by giving away Imprimis for free. As we both get it, we read it. So all you have to do is go to MetaxasForHillsdale.com and you can get it. But there's a lot of other stuff there. But I would say start with that. Just go to MetaxaForHillsdale.com and sign up to get Imprimis every month. And it's just fantastic. But there's free courses on the Constitution. There's all kinds of stuff. So check it out. When we come back, I'm talking to Jonathan Merritt. His book came out just yesterday. And he is always just a wonderful person to talk to. I'm looking forward to that. Stick around and go to Food for the Poor, 844-330-HOPE, 844-330-HOPE.
Today was really rough again.
I'm really sorry to hear that. Stay strong. Walk me through everything that happened.
I just don't see how this can get any better.
Why don't we talk about it? Our video session is scheduled to start soon. I'm with Faithful Counseling, and we're here to help. Our team of licensed Christian counselors want to help you get through this. We can begin a conversation when you're ready, by text or phone, even by video conferencing, from the comfort of your own home. I'd like to give you your first week free. Go to tryfaithfulcounseling.com. Let's talk. Go right now to tryfaithfulcounseling.com. We really want to help you. It's so easy to get started, and your first week is free. Go now to tryfaithfulcounseling.com. Let us help.
Imagine a politician saying this today. I have wondered at times what the Ten Commandments would have looked like if Moses had run them through the U.S. Congress. That is a quote from Ronald Reagan. He showed us through his life, his faith, and with his words that Judeo-Christian values and principles matter. You can help spread the legacy of Ronald Reagan, and you can do it by getting a Reagan email address. Right now, if you have a Gmail, AOL, Yahoo, or other big tech company email address, you help them market their service with every email you send. In return, they scan your emails and target you with unwanted advertising. Well, thanks to our sponsor, ReaganPrivacy.com, you can instead share the Reagan name with every email you send, and they won't scan your emails. They'll leave you alone. Get an email address you'll be proud to own at ReaganPrivacy.com. Your very own personal private email address is available to you at ReaganPrivacy.com. Get your Reagan email address right now at ReaganPrivacy.com.
Warning, property protected by electric fence. Sharks sighted in water.
There are a lot of warnings you don't want to miss.
Bridge out.
Especially when it comes to your identity and the personal information on your devices. That's why new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection now adds Norton Security for more protection than ever. LifeLock uses proprietary technology to detect threats, like your personal info for sale on the dark web. And Norton Security helps protect up to 5 devices from ransomware and other online threats. Plus, if you have a problem, our agents will work to fix it. No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But missing a warning sign...
Warning. Minefield ahead.
...could be dangerous. Join now and get 10% off your first year, plus a $25 Amazon gift card with annual enrollment. Just go to LifeLock.com and enter promo code SMART. Terms apply. New LifeLock with Norton. More detection, more protection.
Hi, this is Rhett Rasmussen of BestHotGrill.com. Not only do we have great grills, but also the best hot patio heaters. We are the nationwide distributor for Bromic Radiant Patio Heaters, the very best patio heater that you can get. The Bromic heaters use the same radiant burner technology as our Solaire infrared grills, so they heat up fast and keep you warm so you can enjoy your backyard grill and outdoor living spaces into the night and all year round. Bromic heaters have stylish contemporary designs that fit perfectly in backyard and restaurant patios. We have gas and electric models to suit most installation needs, and a portable gas heater that directs the heat where you want it, not the bushes and walls like the mushroom heaters. For top quality performance and aesthetics, you want Bromic Radiant Patio Heaters and Solaire Infrared Grills. Learn about these amazing grills and heaters at BestHotGrill.com. That's BestHotGrill.com, BestHotGrill.com.
Thank you. folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. As promised, sitting here in the studio, if you have Metaxas Super, you can see us because there are cameras. Sitting in the studio with Jonathan Merritt. You may know him from, could be anything. He's a contributing writer for The Atlantic magazine, contributing editor for The Week. He's written a lot on faith and culture, on and on and on. But we're here specifically because there's a brand new book called Learning to Speak God from Scratch, How Sacred Words Are Vanishing and How We Can Revive Them. Jonathan Merritt, welcome and congratulations on the book.
Oh, thanks. It's my pleasure to be on the show with you.
I have to ask you, you have written a lot. You're prolific. People say I'm prolific, and I think, no, you don't understand. I'm actually not. You are. You write tons of essays for The Atlantic and for all kinds of stuff, and then you've somehow found time to write a book. So what, when you say learning to speak God from scratch, why sacred words are vanishing and how we can revive them, that's incredibly intriguing, and it makes me want to ask you, what does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so maybe the best way to begin is just to tell a story. I moved from the Bible Belt to New York City about 5 years ago, and when I did, I ran into this language barrier. It wasn't that I couldn't speak English anymore. I could still relay an address to an Uber driver, but I could no longer, as I say in the book, speak God. That having spiritual conversations became really difficult. Either the person I was speaking to wouldn't understand exactly what I was saying, or maybe as I thought about it, I didn't really understand what some of those words meant, or the words were triggering in some way for people. And I realized over time, as I lost confidence in those words, I stopped using them. I stopped having spiritual conversations.
And when you say that, I mean, you were raised a Christian, your father's a pastor. And so this was normal for you. And what part of the world did you grow up in?
I grew up outside of Atlanta.
So you grew up in the world, the Christian world. And so you come to a place like New York, and I've actually cracked jokes about this for years. I mean, it's hilarious. New Yorkers don't speak Christian. Mm-hmm. So when I hear somebody say something like, you know, I was really, I spent a lot of time in the Word this morning, that means nothing to somebody from New York, unless they are themselves, you know, an evangelical or a serious Christian the way we are. But they're like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. They have no clue. There's all these things that we don't even realize we're saying. And so is that part of what you're talking about, is those words,
yes,
or just those, the deeper conversations?
Yeah, I would say there's a difference, and I talk about this in the book, that there's sort of Christianese, which is what I would call cultural Christian lingo. So if you've ever started a prayer chain or prayed for a hedge of protection, that's Christianese. I'm not really concerned with cultural Christian language in this book as much as historical Christian language. So if you say, like, I don't like the word sin, I don't use the word sin. Those are the types of terms that I'm really concerned about, because I think that they are important. They're important in the vocabulary of faith and the Christian lexicon. And I think it's very difficult for us to follow Christ in the 21st century without learning to express our faith and to be formed by our faith. And that includes the words that we use. And one of the things that I realized when I was doing this book, I started to dig into the data. I commissioned a massive survey of more than 1,000 American adults, and I found most of us have problems speaking God. We don't do it.
When you say speaking God, give me an example of what you mean. You mean talking about sin? Like, people feel uncomfortable using that word, so they don't even talk about the concept?
Yeah, so there are two kinds of trends that I looked at. The first is, and we know this because of Google Ngram data. Now Google, everything, it's like the 6 degrees of Google these days, right? Everything goes back to Google.
I don't even know what that means. Google Ngram data?
Yeah, so they have basically, Google has cataloged, going back since to the 1500s, they have cataloged all of the books, all of the articles, all of the speeches, all of the transcripts, all of the web pages, all of the words that have been produced in the English-speaking world, and they've made it searchable. So,
I find that scary, by the way.
It is kind of
scary.
I think
we're about 8 years from the end times. Go ahead.
That might be true.
Yeah.
Am I on the Tim LaHaye show?
You might as well be. When I hear that Google has like done something like that, I'm like, oh yeah, and then the end will come. Mm-hmm. Like the mm-hmm. bulls of wrath are tipping. They're mm-hmm. ready to go. Here we go.
Well, in this case, it's really helpful because anyone can search the frequency of the usage of words
right.
going back a really long time. What we found is that all religious words virtually, including like virtue words and moral words and ethical words, have been in massive decline over the last 50 years.
That, and I'm teasing you and stuff, but that is exactly correct. And I've noticed that. And I was actually, when I was writing my book, If You Can Keep It, I was talking about George Washington and honor and dignity and virtue and all these things. These were words without which the founders could not have created what we call the United States of America. They were at the very heart of this vision of self-government. And I thought today, no one talks, unless you're in the military, about honor, dignity, virtue. I mean, basically, we either don't talk about them or in places like, you know, colleges or where I went to college or in New York sophisticated society, they are mocked. Mm-hmm. Like the very idea, it could only be treated as something hypocritical, mm-hmm. like not as an actual thing.
Well, and that's why, you know, I wasn't surprised that a word like atonement declined. I mean, like those heavy, meaty theological words, I expected those to decline. But grace has declined by almost 50% in usage. The word courage, compassion words, kindness words. All of these have decreased, and that has a profound effect. So that's kind of the first trend is the decline of sacred speech. The other trend is the decline of spiritual conversation. So when I sat down, thanks to the Barna Group, we got to talk to over 1,000 American adults, and we said, how often do you have a spiritual or religious conversation? And what we found is, despite widespread religiosity in America, so this is not just in New York, all across America, only 7% of Americans say they have a spiritual or religious conversation on a regular basis, which is only once a week. So it's not that much. If you look at practicing Christians, that number is only 13%. Only 1 in 8 practicing Christians feel confident enough to have a spiritual or religious conversation once a week.
Okay, in 4 minutes, we're going to go to break and I'm going to go kill myself. This is really, this is so depressing, Jonathan. Mm. So I guess it's why you wrote the book, because you want to talk about this. You obviously believe it's possible to revive what you call a sacred vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
And how so? See, the reason I mean, I do too, but I think it's such a battle in the culture right now, because when you say courage,
mm-hmm.
A lot of this stuff goes to sexuality issues, right? In other words, you talk about be a man. What does that mean? You can no longer say that without getting kind of pushback where people say, well, how do you know what it is to be a man? Or how do you know, you know, like you're putting something on me that I don't want you to put on me.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you say things like courage, it's kind of like, well, that's your idea of courage. My idea of courage is something else. And so it has taken a long time to get here. This is like, this didn't happen in the last, you know, 10 years, basically. But how do you see us reviving thinking and talking about these things?
Well, there's a question even before that question, which is, why does it matter? That's an important question, because one of the things I did for this book was I spent a year studying linguistics and found that the things that we say, there's an emerging body of research now that shows this. The things that we say, the words that we use or don't use, shape us in ways that we never even realized, and more profoundly, shape the ways that we think and the behaviors that we express.
By the way, this is right out of 1984. You know that, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. George Orwell said that the ministry of whatever, the way they will change people is by removing words.
Right.
So at some point, if the word freedom doesn't really exist as a you can't conceive of it without the word. That's
right.
Part of what it means to be human.
Right.
And so you're saying that when you use these words, it's a little bit like when somebody says, if you smile, mm-hmm. you will begin to feel happy.
Right.
There's something about being human that doing it or saying it has power.
Yeah. Like, I'll give you an example that I tell in the book is, in English, we have a futured language. So yesterday I said, I will go on the Eric Metaxas show tomorrow. But I have friends who are from Asian countries, for example, that are not futured. They use one tense, and you kind of have to figure out based on the
are
context
you kidding
of the
me?
Words.
That's mind blowing.
So like Chinese, for example, I would say I go on an Eric Metaxas show, and I would have to, from the context, figure it out. Well, why does that matter? When you compare a futured speaking language culture like ours to a non-futured culture, you find that we practice more safe sex, we smoke less, we save more for retirement, we prepare
more
for death.
We're thinking about the future.
We think more about the future, and our behavior patterns are built around that. So when we don't talk about courage, compassion, kindness, grace, we are not attuned to those realities. And then we wake up one day and we say, We live in a culture that's not courageous, that's not kind, that's not compassionate, and we do not realize that that is in part a rhetorical problem.
Wow. Now, what did you study in college? Because it's interesting to me that you're going to the linguistics. That's not, I think we're out of time in this break. When we come back, folks, I won't kill myself, although I've been sorely tempted. When we come back, folks, more with Jonathan Merritt. The book is Learning to Speak God from Scratch. Stick around. It's the Erickman Taxes Show.
As we shall rise,
amen, we shall rise
on that resurrection morning when death's prison bars are broken.
If you could interview God...
Why do I deserve your special attention?
Don't you?
What would you ask?
So what do I tell the people who say you don't exist?
Tell them the world they see is just that. And sometimes that's just the way it looks.
Starring Academy Award nominee David Strathairn and Brenton Thwaites.
We try to be good people, try to please you, and we need some answers. And where did you go? Do you have any idea how that feels?
An Interview with God. A 3-night event in select theaters August 20th, 21st, and 22nd only. For theaters and tickets, go to aninterviewwithgod.com.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper in credit card debt? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management will consolidate your accounts and work with your creditors. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976.
You know, I'm not a genius about money. I love my credit cards, and they love me. I was using them as a source of income, and then I got behind in my payments, and creditors were calling. I figured I had a problem, and I didn't know how to deal with it. I heard about Trinity, so I called and talked to a counselor. In half an hour, we worked out a plan. Now I've got one easy monthly payment, a lower interest rate, and I'm getting out of debt.
If you're in an endless cycle of paying on credit card balances that never seem to go away, then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity will consolidate your accounts, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Call 1-800-990-6976. That's 1-800-990-6976. Call 1-800-990-6976.
Folks, you can put on your boogie shoes, but I got a radio program to do. I'm talking, fortunately, to Jonathan Merritt. Jonathan, let's put on our boogie shoes after the program. This is a talk
Sounds
show.
Good.
The music's good, but we need to talk. Okay, look, you're talking about speaking God, learning to speak God from scratch, and you go in this linguistics direction. I find it really interesting because it is undeniable that human beings are not we're not machines, we're not animals, we're something special. We're creating the image of God, and words matter profoundly to the God we worship, profoundly. We know this, in the beginning was the Word. God spoke words of truth. God spoke the universe into existence, I should say, on and on and on. But I find it so interesting that you're saying part of where we are as a culture has to do with words, and you think words can help us get out of this abyss of meaninglessness.
Yeah, and you're right. That should not be surprising to Christians, because if you read the scripture, you find this amazing emphasis that's placed on words. In fact, every transformative event in biblical history occurs with words. I mean, Jesus shows up in his hometown synagogue and says, "I've been anointed to proclaim." And then his ministry is first and foremost a ministry of words. He's going, he's teaching. And then it's no surprise that the last thing Jesus says before he ascends is, "Go therefore into all the world and speak God," essentially. And so their words, I mean, even the fact that you read the Bible, that God reveals with words. And yet I think, how often do we stop and ask, what am I saying when I'm saying what I'm saying? What am I saying when I'm talking about God? Or why is it that my words now are no longer focused on these things that I say matter to me? Because we do talk about things that we care about, right? If you're a Yankees fan, you talk about the Yankees. If you're a parent, you talk about your children. And yet, the vast majority of Americans, 70.6%, claim to be identified as Christians, and yet that system is sort of broken down. It's fritzed out. They claim that these things are important to them, but they haven't been able to talk about God.
I mean, my thesis on this is that we've become an increasingly secular culture because we are a media culture. We weren't a media culture, let's say 1940 or 1920. Right? Something has happened where the mass media has risen over the decades, and the mass media typically is run by, you know, the cultural elites who tend to be very secular. They tend to be from cities. They tend to see things differently than the people in the heartland. And so in a way, via the media, they've gotten the upper hand in the cultural conversation. And I think that they have probably inadvertently, in some cases, intentionally pushed people away from thinking about these things. In some cases, it's been conscious, but in many cases, it's not conscious. It's, you know, there's some people that are cultural Marxists and they want to break down all of this stuff. And then there are other people that they just don't know it. They weren't raised with it and stuff. And I think that's part of the problem is that if people are consuming mass media, you're getting a largely secular view. You're not getting, you know, what you might get on this program, which is kind of a hodgepodge or a mix. You're getting pure secularism, basically. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in a way, that's part of the big problem, at least as I see
it. Well, it is actually. When I put in the book, there's a great infographic where I give the 13 reasons people give from the study that we conducted. The 13 reasons people give, the number one reason is they say, I feel like religious and spiritual conversations create tension or arguments today. A lot of people say, I don't like the way that these words are used or portrayed in pop culture. They say, I'm afraid that if I have spiritual conversations, I will seem like a religious extremist. Of course, we know Barna has reported on this. Now, the majority of Americans say that trying to convert someone makes you an extremist.
Right.
So even evangelism today is considered extremist.
Jesus was an extremist. And if he had any wisdom, he would never have spoken because it's offensive.
Right.
How bizarre. But I think, don't you think this comes back to the issue of courage? Like, if you really believe something, if I really believe the message of Jesus is good, how could I not share it with people? I mean, if it changed my life, it's the golden key to the secret of my life. What's the meaning of my life? Jesus and the Bible, and it's here it is.
Right.
And so to not share it would be like not sharing food with people who are malnourished. And yet we're told, like, keep your stupid food to yourself. And I think we have to make the case, no, you don't understand. This is beautiful. This
right.
is true. This is wonderful. Whatever caricature you've bought, it's a caricature. But, you know, it's tough to make that case.
It is. And there is good news in all of this because, as you know, the subtitle of the book is And How We Can Revive Them. And what I found when I was studying linguistics is not only can living languages die, but dying languages can be revived. And there are great examples.
For example,
Hebrew is a great example.
Yes.
In my neighborhood in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, you'll hear Yiddish, which is a comeback language, what linguists call comeback languages, Hawaiian, Irish, Gaelic, Catalan, there's a lot of different languages that are called comeback languages. And so what I was trying to do in this book is to figure out what happens to bring a language back from the dead. And what would it look like, at least in America, if those of us who claim to follow Jesus decided we're going to bring this back? We claim to believe in resurrection. So don't we think it's possible that we can actually resurrect the vocabulary of faith? And I think it is possible.
Wow. That's encouraging. I'm so glad I didn't kill myself on the break. See, that's
too.
The key. That's
Same.
Why I say suicide is bad, because you don't know what's coming tomorrow. And I didn't even have to wait till tomorrow. I just had to wait just a few minutes. Okay, folks, we're talking about this new book by Jonathan Merritt, who's with me in the studio. It is called Learning to Speak God from Scratch, Why Sacred Words Are Vanishing and How We Can Revive Them. Stick around.
That keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory. It keeps you ever gentle on my mind.
Hey, Albin.
Yeah.
Did I tell you that I take Relief Factor?
Yes, you did.
I take Relief Factor because running causes me sometimes back pain or hip pain or whatever. You know, a lot of people have experiences with different kinds of pain. And you don't want to take something that is toxic, right? I don't want to be like popping Advil or whatever. I take Relief Factor because it's made from botanicals. You can take it all day long. For example, a guy named Michael from Connecticut gives us his point of view. He says, Relief Factor helped to almost completely eliminate my elbow pain when I couldn't find any other solution. It's a great product, has helped with a lot of other aches and pain. Since I started Relief Factor, I feel like I've got more energy and generally feel better. That's why I take it. Hey, I don't take it for my health. Actually, I do. I do take it for my health. But it's interesting because people, I think that they have to put up with pain. My advice is try Relief Factor. The Quick Start Kit is only $19.95. Try it for 3 weeks. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com.
If you could interview God,
why do I deserve your special attention?
Don't you?
What would you ask?
So what do I tell the people who say you don't exist?
Tell them the world they see is just that. And sometimes that's just the way it looks.
Starring Academy Award nominee David Strathairn and Brenton Thwaites.
We try to be good people, try to please you, and we need some answers. And where did you go? Do you have any idea how that feels?
An interview with God. A 3-night event in select theaters August 20th, 21st, and 22nd only. For theaters and tickets, go to aninterviewwithgod.com.
Hey, Albin.
Yeah.
Do I look different?
Oh, you do.
Don't I look productive?
You look great.
And focused?
Yeah.
You know why? Because I'm sitting in this thing. You see this?
Yeah.
Sleek
what
chair.
Is that?
It's called an X chair.
Yeah.
It's not just a chair. It's an X chair.
Wow.
And I guess, how do I describe it? It's basically, it really helps you. It's got sleek, modern design, but it kind of helps you to focus because it's customized for your exact body type.
That's
you get improved
great.
Posture, all the whole. It's actually a smart investment, really, which is why I have it here. And you know what? Can I tell you this? Can I tell you this? You can experience the X Chair for yourself by going to xchaireric.com. That's xchaireric.com. Or if you've got a phone, a lot of people have phones now, 1-844-4XCHAIR. That's 1-844-4XCHAIR. You get a 30-day, no questions asked, guarantee of complete satisfaction. It's on sale now for $100 off. Go to xchaireric.com to save $100. If you use Eric Footrest, the code Eric Footrest, they'll even throw in a free footrest. Code Eric Footrest. Go to xchaireric.com.
Endless scratching. The itch from my eczema is unbearable. Are you struggling to get relief from chronic itching due to your atopic dermatitis, also known as eczema? If so, you may qualify for a clinical study testing an investigational medication for the severe itch associated with atopic dermatitis. Qualified participants will receive study-related care and medication at no charge. Call 1-844-777-4824 or 1-844-777-ITCH or visit advandastudy.com for more information on how to participate. Sponsored by Vanda Pharmaceuticals.
The longest stock market bull run in history has been fueled by easy credit that is now tightening. Just like the dot-com and housing bubbles of 2000-2008, the current everything bubble is ready to burst. Don't get caught in the aftermath again. In preparation for the coming collapse, retirement expert Adam Baratta has just released a new book called Gold is a Better Way and Other Wealth-Building Secrets Wall Street Doesn't Want You to Know. See why thousands of books have already been shipped and why it's been listed as a number one new arrival in its category on Amazon for weeks. To order your copy of the Gold is a Better Way book and receive access to the number one gold education member platform in the world, text the word GOLD to 49776. Gold is a Better Way reveals the insider information Wall Street doesn't want you to know that could save your retirement. Just text GOLD to 49776. Text the word GOLD to 49776 now to reserve your book and free access to the Gold is a Better Way platform. It's time for a return to wisdom. Join the movement. Text the word GOLD to 49776. Standard text and messaging rates apply.
We've only just begun to live. White lace and promises.
Hey there, folks. That's Karen Carpenter, one of the big names in the thrash metal genre today. I'm sitting here talking to Jonathan Merritt. Learning to Speak God from Scratch is the book. Jonathan, congratulations on the new book.
Thanks.
This is a big thing. I mean, it's clearly a big thing for me because I can't shut up when we're talking here. I get very excited about this idea. But don't you think that part of the problem is what I was saying earlier, that the concept of courage or the concept of dignity? I mean, dignity is a good one. Let's start there, right? You have Antifa smashing things and breaking things, and people are so angry that they're using F this and F that. And I thought, wow, that alone is a huge cultural marker that we are no longer able to have you know, a kind of a – when you think of Dr. King and you think of the civil rights movement, there was tremendous dignity that really shamed racist whites. And you thought, look at these people. Look at the dignity that they have. It's Christian dignity. They were coming from that point of view. So when you think about people screaming or throwing things or cursing, and then you think of Dr. King, you think Dr. King was very effective in bringing about social change because he understood this concept of Christian dignity. Mm-hmm. People today, you know, I would say on the left and on the right, but you're more on the left, I'm more on the right. But I mean, how do you tell people fighting that way is not okay? Mm-hmm. Like, what do we say? Because won't they just say to us, I disagree, shut up?
Mm-hmm. Well, when you think about words and whether it's the word dignity or the word courage, I talk about courage in the book and the courage it takes to speak God, particularly in this culture. You have to be intentional about what words mean. And so one of the things that I realized when I looked at comeback languages is one of the necessary ingredients is that speakers of that language have to have conversations about what they think those words should mean today. New ways of understanding those words, new ways of applying those words to their current cultural context, and ways that they think maybe they've misused or abused those words. And so there are a lot of words when you think about spiritual words, religious words, ethical words, and we could take courage as one of those is a great one. There are things that we call courage today that probably you and I wouldn't recognize as really being fitting for that word. What you have to do then is have intentional conversations within your community. And that's one of the things I'm encouraging in this book. C.S. Lewis wrote a great book called Studies in Words, which was an academic work he published with Cambridge University Press, where he says, you know, if you think about words over time, it's like a tree and it grows and you have to have new branches sprout. And sometimes there's a branch that sprouts that maybe needs to be cut off. It went the wrong direction. Something in the culture pushed your understanding of that concept in the wrong direction. And the community has to come back and prune that tree and allow for new growth. And that's the kind of mechanism that keeps a language alive.
That's interesting. There is so much here. I wish we had hours and hours to talk. I find that part of, you know, what I think of as like the politically correct movement has been about words, right? In other words, you can't say this word, you can't say that. I remember, you know, when I went to Yale in the 80s, and, you know, I grew up in a working class home or whatever. And I remember when I first heard somebody say, like, no, you don't say Oriental, it's Asian. And you could feel the pressure, like, ooh, you don't say that. Like, that, you know, and I remember thinking, oh, okay. And then you kind of think, and who decided that? And like, when did that happen? Or whatever. But it was a lot of stuff like that, this kind of cultural pressure, like, no, we use this word. We don't use that word. We use this word. But it all, you know, some of that obviously is valuable, but some of it is also this kind of, like, there are these groups that they make these decisions. Like, somebody decided we can't use the N-word like a few years ago. And I think, well, that's weird because you have the main character in one of the greatest books of all time, Huckleberry Finn, is, you know, called N-word Jim. Now you can't even – like, that's bizarre. And so a lot of it, I think people do feel like bullied, to use the cliche of the day. You said triggered, so I could say bullied, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it is weird because who are the cultural mandarins who decide this? How does mm-hmm. that work?
Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, when it comes to it, there's sort of one issue, which is like how you label people and people groups. And I that one's a tough one. I tend to not label someone or a group of someone's in ways they wouldn't want to be labeled, just as sort of an act of compassion or deference. But when you come to some of these mainstream religious words, they're decided by the masses. And this is the problem. The problem is when regular folks decide we don't want to speak God, so we're not out there using words because words are defined in the communities in which they're spoken, then the people who get to define it are the cultural elites.
Uh-huh.
They are the ones who they're going to continue to define the way that we understand these. And all of the regular folks, all of the people who are listening to your show who say, you know what, I feel too much pressure because of the way this has been used in politics or pop culture or on television, all of the connotations that have been associated associated with these words. So now sin feels negative. Grace sort of maybe refers to a ballerina, but maybe not to this sort of spiritual reality. So I'm just not really going to use that. Sin, yeah, maybe I could use it to talk about a molten chocolate cake, but I don't want to I don't want to step on any lines theologically. Right. We don't use those.
Right.
And what happens then is it creates this sort of vacuous space where certain groups of people get to define what they mean. And in our effort, we see a problem, which is the way that these words have come to be understood. And in our effort to not contribute to that problem, we actually exacerbate it.
Wow. Exacerbate, by the way, is a trigger word for me. Please don't say that again. And you know what? The word trigger, the word trigger used as a verb is a trigger word for me also.
Okay.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Okay. So I love talking about words. This is a really, it's such an important conversation. And I already want to have you back to talk about this more because this is big. This is a big conversation. What was it though that prompted you to write this book? Like, it's just interesting to me that you chose to take a stand on this.
Well, I chose to take a stand. I always say that, most people who write a book are concept driven. They come up with a concept, they come up with an outline, and they just kind of plug the concepts and the content into the concept. I do the opposite. And so this concept sort of found me. When I discovered this was this big of a problem, and I went, oh my gosh, no one's writing about this. I guess I'm the guy.
Whoa. I like it. You stepped up. If not me, who? All right, folks, we're talking to Jonathan Merritt. The book is Learning to Speak God from Scratch. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Our website, in case you're curious, is metaxastalk.com. We'll be right back.
Stuck inside these four walls, sent inside forever.
This just isn't about my freedom. This is about everybody's freedom. When the government can come in and tell you what to do and what to think and what to create, and you have to choose between your livelihood and your faith, then we don't live in a free America.
That is Baronelle Stutzman. She's been on this program. She's a grandmother, small business owner. She's being sued by the ACLU and her state government. And if she loses, she could have to pay millions of dollars. She's one of many Americans who are fighting for their freedom right now. And if it could happen to them, it can happen to you. That is why Alliance Defending Freedom exists. They provide free legal services to those whose freedoms are under attack, but they can't do it without the generous financial support of friends like you. So please go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner to learn more about Baronelle's story and find out how you can help. Again, that's MetaxasTalk.com. You'll see the banner, or you can call 800-556-2770, 800-556-2770, or again, MetaxasTalk.com.
You know, I'm not a genius about money. I love my credit cards, and they love me. I was using them as a source of income, and then I got behind in my payments, and creditors were calling. I figured I had a problem, and I didn't know how to deal with it. I heard about Trinity, so I called and talked to a counselor. In half an hour, we worked out a plan. Now I've got one easy monthly payment, a lower interest rate, and I'm getting out of debt.
If you're in an endless cycle of paying on credit card balances that never seem to go away, then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity will consolidate your accounts, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Call 1-800-990-6976. That's 1-800-990-6976. Call 1-800-990-6976.
We used to laugh. We used to cry. We used to bow our heads then, wonder why.
The Eric Metaxas Show. Just a few minutes left with Jonathan Merritt. Jonathan, I'm already planning how we can get you back here to continue the conversation. But let me ask you, it seems to me, since you're more on the left politically, I'm more on the right politically, that part of the problem is that we have politicized everything. And so somehow, whether because of the rise of the religious right in the 80s or what, even talking about God, it feels like political. And it didn't used to, I guess. I feel like it didn't used to. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the top answers people gave for why they do not have spiritual or religious conversations regularly is they say religious language has become too politicized. And let me just say, this is a left-right issue. I mean, hello, Bill Clinton used religious language perhaps more than any modern president I can think of. George W. Bush did. Barack Obama certainly did. And so does, you know, a lot of people like to throw stones at Donald Trump, who we disagree about. But as you know, very, very well. But this is not a new phenomenon, and it is not a left-right phenomenon. It is an American political tradition. The difference is that now we are inundated with the words that politicians are speaking because of a 24-hour news cycle, because of social media. And so when religious language is used in a political way or for political ends, it is amplified. And so the effect of that is felt now more than it was, for example, in 1997.
Right. And certainly more than 1987 and 1977. And it's tough. It's actually tough. But I think the way out of it, I mean, for example, you and our mutual dear friend Kirsten Powers have started this podcast. Mm-hmm. And you invited me on as your first guest to talk. We're talking from different points of view, whether on Trump or whatever. But I think modeling that kind of civility and saying, look, I am a Christian first. And if we start there, we probably can talk about anything. And even if we disagree, we're agreeing on the fundamentals. And if we agree on the fundamentals, that kind of changes things, basically. Mm-hmm. And we have to model that. And I want to applaud you and Kirsten for helping lead the way, because I think that if some Christians on both sides do not do that, it is ugly. I mean, I've been attacked more by Christians than anybody. Like, it's truly shocked me, because I thought, whoa, like, I thought for sure I could count on Christians to, like, actually try to hear what I'm saying as opposed to whatever. And that kind of viciousness and emotion, I think that we, you and I and our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, have to model a way forward. Mm-hmm. And say, we're going to link arms on this stuff. Mm-hmm. And if we disagree, that's not what we're here for. We're here to talk about what we know is true, what the scripture says and whatever. So I really wanted to thank you for leading the way on that. If people want to find you online, Jonathan, how can they do that?
Yeah, you can go to my website, jonathanmerritt.com, two R's, two T's, and Merritt. And you can find me on social media. I'm there.
And I have. And it's wonderful to know you. It's wonderful that we're in the city together. And I just want to, again, congratulate you on the book. And just generally speaking, trying to model a civil way forward and trying to resurrect and revive these sacred words. God bless you. Thanks for being my guest.
Thanks for having me on.
General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.